One, two, three, four. Just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day. Yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
Oh. Welcome back. We are here live at the Horrible Imaginings Film Festival. We have a few people standing around here. They just got done with a block of, I believe it was shorts.
Yeah.
And so, first of all, I love what's going on here. There's a few booths set up. They have a makeup station over there. Girls getting done up like a zombie. Over to my left, there's the Horror Writers Union, I believe that is what it is. And this is amazing. So yeah,
John, our buddy John Groobs is here, and he was telling us a little of the history that this started out in just some rinky-dink crap theater downtown 8 years ago, I think he said.
Yeah, 8 years ago.
And now it's grown to this.
It's weird because it's in the Museum of Photographic Arts in Balboa Park.
Yeah.
And it's bright and sunny with this beautiful old-style colonial architecture, and then in the middle they're having a horror movie festival in the middle of the goddamn day.
Yeah, and there's like one of those guys in silver paint doing a little robot thing out front.
Yeah, right.
And a bunch of like Jesus tables.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of Hindu stuff going on there.
Here we are.
Ironically, a really interesting spot to have a horror movie itself set.
Right.
If people were to start being murdered unexpectedly here.
For sure.
And they just find little self-help books littered all around the corpses.
Now, this is actually pretty cool. We got invited to do this, or actually you did. Someone reached out to you because you love horror movies.
Right,
we all do.
Right. And that's why I'm excited to be around my people now because, honestly, like, horror, and I want to talk about this with Miguel when we have him on. Horror is a small community that I feel like everyone that ever discovered horror, they thought they were the only ones when that happened. So, you know, it's awesome to see these people.
You don't realize how big it is.
And you know, that's what I want to talk to some of these people around here for. So we're going to pull some people over. We're going to ask them a few questions. We're going to get to talk to the organizers and also some of the people at these booths here. And so, yeah, let's get it going. Okay, first up, who we have here is Chad from, I don't want to butcher the name of your organization. It's the Horror Movie Union.
Too late, he butchered it.
Yep. He butchered it.
Damn it.
The Horror Writers Association.
All right, okay, and you're the San Diego chapter.
Yes, the San Diego chapter.
Tell us a little bit about your organization.
Well, it's a international group of writers who write horror, and a lot of major cities throughout America and other countries.
Is it all types chapters of writing, like screenplays, books, shorts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything involving writing and horror,
nice.
Basically. The games, comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's all inclusive of writing, so long as it's writing in horror, dark fiction.
Now, what do you guys do for each other? Do you like workshop? Do you help each other get their work out there? What does the community do? What does your association do for its members?
Well, there's a lot of perks for being in the actual organization. I mean, you have access to convention perks.
I think you get to hack to death one teenager a year. Like,
that's a secret, though.
Secret's
out.
Sorry.
Know about that until you join.
Looks like I made the list.
We can edit that in post.
There's sometimes exclusive anthologies that you can submit to. You have access basically to a lot of other writers that you might not normally be communicating with outside of the organization. Not to say that you wouldn't be able to be a part of that. Where you're not part of the
organization. But it just sort of helps with networking.
But it helps. You know, there's a lot of networking involved. A lot of just getting to know people in the writing world, the horror writing world and whatnot.
So what do you write?
I write horror.
Like, what do you write? Like, screen movies, short stories?
I write fiction. I just came out with my first novel, Secrets of the Weird.
Nice.
It was released by Gray Matter Press in July.
Oh, really? Where's that available?
You can get it on Amazon. You can get it from the Gray Matter Press website.
Awesome.
I have it available here for people at Horrible Imaginings.
All right.
All right.
Right on. Yeah.
Now, what's your background in writing? Did you go to school for writing? Is it just something you've always done since you were a kid?
I did actually go to school for it because I wrote a little bit when I was younger, but never really took it seriously. It was just
a lot of short stories.
Fun. Yeah, just for fun. Just kind of I enjoyed it. And then for a long time, I got very heavily involved in music. So all I really wrote for quite a few years were lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided at some point that I was going to go back to school, and I took a short story class just as an elective and really enjoyed it. And the professor in that class seemed to think that I had something special about what I was writing. So instead of going into the teaching credential program, which was my initial plan, sort of last minute switched out and decided to get my master's degree in creative writing.
Really? Okay.
And,
did you ever, when that happened, did you have like an aha moment or like where you wrote a story and just said, I got to do this all the time? Or was it just like a slow process where one day you're like, nah, I think I'm going to do.
It was the story that I eventually evolved into the novel I just released, actually.
Okay.
Nice. That was the one that changed it for me, that made me realize I should probably be doing this. This is for me. And I should have realized it when I was much younger, but I didn't really have that encouragement, I guess.
Sure.
So. It'd be funny if he was like a typical person in our society who's like, I hate it. I hate writing horror. I just want to paint kittens. That's all I want to do. But
fucking stuck in this novel job.
I can do that under a pseudonym, though.
Now, okay, so is it possible to give us a synopsis of what your novel's about, or is it a little too complicated?
Well, I wanted to say on one hand it is a little complicated, but I don't want to say it's too complicated because that might turn people off from reading it.
Sure, sure.
In a nutshell, I'd say it's about a bunch of misfits trying to navigate life in a strange city.
Okay.
Like Jerry Only and Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, those guys.
Well, it is a very punk rock novel at the same time. There's a lot of that world involved.
Nice.
in this book. So there that does play into it. But it's I don't know. I would recommend it to fans of Clive Barker.
Okay.
Poppy Z. Bright. Things like that. It's definitely a mix of horror, dark fantasy.
Sounds cool.
With punk rock edge.
Now, what is the criteria to be part of your organization? Do you submit? Do you have to be accepted?
There are different tiers of the organization. You can be, I forget what the name of it is, but you can be like a supporter of the organization, not actually even a writer, and still, you know, pay a monthly or a yearly due and get involved in some way.
Right.
And then there are different tiers of certain amount of sales you've made. Like you can make some semi-professional sales and be at an affiliate
sort of like the Writers Guild.
The active level. So
nice.
You basically just have to show proof of that and pay a yearly dues.
Okay.
Now we're all stand-up comics by trade. I wonder if it's like kind of like comedy where it's like the top tiers talk shit on the lower tiers. Like, that guy's an open micer. That guy's bottom tier. He didn't even make anything on his last
album. Know how to describe
there
a severed head.
Like that. I can't speak to that personally. I have felt... You know, a lot of welcome from the people that I've met that have been around longer than me.
Just like any community, there's some people that are cool.
I'm still very new to this world. This is only just from the last few years for me, and there's people who have been involved in it for, you know, a couple of decades now.
Yeah.
And
nice.
Anybody that I've met, I haven't met any jerks yet.
That's awesome.
Well, you've met some now.
Yeah, so. You met three.
I hope that I never do, but, you know.
How many years have been coming to the Horrible Imaginings?
This is my second year.
Second year, okay.
And I'm actually going to be doing a reading here this year from my book, since they have a literary...
Oh, I saw that on the schedule. Yeah, later tonight, right?
Yeah, there's going to be a panel, and then there's going to be a break, and then readings. Myself and two other writers will be reading. One of them is the legendary Dennis Etchison, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
And,
I do not know who that is, but I'll take your word for it.
Trust me, he's good.
So, Chad, how can people find out more about your organization? Is there a website they can go to?
Horror.org.
Really? You got
that
one?
Available? Yeah. Wow.
Holy shit. Great name.
Yeah, nice.
All the information on there.
I got to see who's on horror.com. I don't even know.
It's got to be porn of some sort. It always is.
Oh, nice. Chad, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. Yeah, we really appreciate
it. Me.
Absolutely. All right, our next guest is no stranger to the Degenerate Podcast. She's been on before. She's our dear friend. She took me on a horror movie trivia, and she kind of emceed our film punch when we did Pet Sematary.
That's right, yeah.
Beth Accomando, everybody.
Hey.
Thanks for coming back on the show. It's good to see you here. I figured I'd read on you. We all did.
Oh, yeah, we knew you would be here. Absolutely.
And you're the organizer of the Hammerfest.
Yeah, Miguel and I, through our Film Geek San Diego group,
ran
a year-long Hammer horror film series.
That's crazy.
Universal Horror, and this year we're in the middle or towards the end of John Carpenter.
John Carpenter. Actually, yeah, John Groobs, again, plugging him on our podcast.
Yes.
He and I went to see Big Trouble in Little China when you guys were screening that. It was amazing.
And John designed our t-shirts, which are awesome. Low pan.
That's enough about John. For real.
It'll go to his head.
So do you have a hand in this festival as well?
Yes, I do.
Oh, really?
I'm one of the festival judges, and I was also on the selection committee, and I cook the themed desserts that go with the reception every year.
Ooh, I'm interested in these desserts.
Yeah, I'm sticking around.
Red velvet coffin cakes.
Oh, that's awesome.
So down.
And then there was chocolate blood.
Because
chocolate blood is great because it tastes good, but you can also like scare someone by just like smearing it over you and it looks realistic.
So you're sitting there smearing yourself in cake?
Yes. And blood. It's really good for kids. You know, you can scare your parents. You just drip a little from the side of your mouth and it's like, Mom.
Yeah, sounds amazing.
Now, are there different categories for, you know, the or is it just best feature or best short?
For the awards?
Yes.
Yeah, there's different categories. So there are like best animated, best creature feature, I think, best feature film, then actors.
Best cupcakes.
Directors. Yes, if only. So yeah, we break it down because it's so hard. I mean, in fact, we have people voting for, you know, audience favorite right now.
Yeah.
But in a block of shorts, there's such a diversity in terms of the style,
oh, yeah,
the tone,
imagine.
The content.
It's like a comedy showcase.
So hard
it's like,
to
there's
pick.
Like 10 of these guys.
It's so hard to pick. I mean, an ogre that paints with a dead kid versus breakdancing zombies. Like, how do you choose between
Oh,
that?
You got to go yeah. ogre. Yeah,
I don't know. I feel like
I don't
should...
know. The breakdancing zombies were pretty darn cool.
I feel
cool.
like they should share a movie.
Also,
ooh, crossover.
What kind of painting was it? Because, you know, if he's
this
like an impressionist,
kid.
You
oh,
know.
It was adorable. He painted a little picture of himself and his mom. You know, I love you, Mom.
He's more of a, it was more of a Jackson Pollock kind of feel. He just threw the kid against the canvas.
See, I don't care for Jackson
off.
Pollock ogre painting at all.
All right, then you were more of a breakdancing zombies guy. I know where you're coming from.
Some Picasso, maybe.
So if you had to pick right now, or is it too soon to tell, who's kind of like the favorite in this year's festival as far as features go?
Well, I will say that for the short films, most of the judges and a lot of people who've seen it were really impressed by A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky.
A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky.
A French film that screened Friday night. And...
Frenchie's coming in here stealing our film festival. What's this all about?
But the thing about it, and it fits perfectly with what Miguel wants to do with the festival, which is it breaks down kind of the boundaries of what you define as horror, so it doesn't fit in exactly to any one category. So there's a little sci-fi element, there's a little gore element, there's... you know, this sense of real character and story development, so it's...
Is it subtitled?
Yes, it is.
How's the painting ogres element?
Yeah.
Painting ogres, you don't need subtitles for.
I feel like the best French horror films are just a German army coming towards you.
Now, this goes about one more day as well. I think yep. You guys are rounding up the end of the shorts right now, right?
Well, there's short blocks each day.
Okay.
Tomorrow we have features as well. Every day there's shorts and features.
Okay.
And tomorrow on Sunday there is a great pair of retro screenings. So we're paying tribute to George Romero,
oh,
who
beautiful.
Died last month.
Yeah.
And we're showing Martin, which is an unusual pick. Usually people go with one of the Living Dead films.
Sure.
But,
the Martin Lawrence sitcom?
Yeah.
Yes. This is great. It's a vampire film, but the guy might be a vampire or he might just be a psychotic teenager who thinks he's a vampire.
Can he be both?
Don't we all, when we're teenagers, feel that we might be psychotic vampires deep down? Deep down.
But they don't sparkle.
Oh, right. Thank God.
That's important.
All right. Beth, thank you so much for coming back on, and we'd love to have you on again soon.
All right. Thanks.
Now, it's a bold move, I think, for them to be doing this festival now, because as you guys know, this weekend is also the opening of the new It movie, the
right.
remake.
Kind of right. a big weekend for movies, because
yeah.
everyone's been anticipating it. It's,
yeah,
and
is...
Ryan, you've been rereading the book, right?
I have not read the novel It since I was in fifth grade, and I know that's a weird pick for a fifth grader, but that's the kind of shit I read back then.
Explains
and,
a lot.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, with a book that size, because it's like 1,125 pages, I did a lot of skimming. I'm like,
Right.
And, okay, so I'm going back and I'm rereading it ahead of the movie. I have not seen the remake yet. It just came out yesterday. And I'm starting... I was trying to figure out why there's so much superfluous detail and, like, King does like some like weird side tangents and he'll mention details that never come back into play. I know
yeah,
that because I have read
you were saying that to me the other day. You're like, there's two solid pages of him just describing one particular item.
You know, or not even that. It's like 10 pages on like how one of the kids found some lobsters and brought them home to his mom and she cooked them and then he didn't want any and then she was like, why don't you want any? And then that never comes back into play. And it's, I'm like, 10 pages right there. Then I realized what year it came out. And the fact that King was a huge cokehead back in the 80s.
Huge cokehead.
And then it all made sense.
Oh, yeah.
These are the ramblings of a guy on coke.
Fantastic.
Like for instance, if you wrote a novel about an evil clown, that should be like no more than 350 pages. But if you write it on cocaine, it's going to be 1,125
yeah.
pages.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Totally
with
makes
a lot
sense.
Of ramblings, a lot of side tangents.
Yeah. Yeah, I never saw the movie or read the book, but this one's getting pretty good reviews. I think this is actually a good weekend.
Well, you never
to have
saw
this
the movie either with Tim
no.
Curry?
No, I haven't either.
What?
No.
We should have a screening.
It's a classic. What the hell's the matter with
you? Is it
you?
Though? Bobby and I haven't seen it. Is
what
it
do
classic?
You guys
yeah,
think it's
be
about?
Too classic.
Yeah, I don't think it's.
I'm interested to know what you think it's about.
It's about a am I giving spoilers? It's about a giant spider.
No, not necessarily.
I thought it was a game about form. I thought it was a whole movie about tag. Like,
get out of here. Put crickets in. Can you put crickets in there, right?
I wish that more people were paying attention to us right now and have them all boo at you.
I'm throwing in such a good laugh track in the
the one you bring to all your shows? Zing.
Now, guys, we always talk about like what horror movies I like and all these things. What horror movies do you guys like, the casual fan?
I will say this. I am not a big horror movie fan, but there was a horror movie that I saw that was the first movie that I was just watching on cable one day that I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe they made a movie like this. And it was the remake of The Hills Have Eyes. And
ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. It is. And you watch it, and you're like, there's monsters raping people. This is crazy.
Hey, they're not monsters. They're just misunderstood.
They're mutants, please.
Okay, fair enough. You wouldn't expect, like, if you're not used to that, if you are used to just watching normal movies, you've never seen that in a movie, it's somewhat shocking. And you're like, you know what? I can go for this genre. You know, it's something different.
What about you, Dave?
I think I'm in between you and Bobby. Bobby's a casual. You're a hardcore. I love horror movies, not as much as you do, though. And it's interesting. I feel like the genre, or maybe Hollywood, has changed a little bit. Because when I was growing up and when I was in high school, I swear there was a new horror movie in the theaters every single week.
Yeah, and you're like 10 years older than me, and I miss this.
I know.
This
me and my buddies
genre.
Would go like Slaughterhouse Rock, Night of the Demons, Prison, just all the like every week, and it was amazing. A lot of them were not very good, but it was just like a fun time to be able to go see this shit in the theaters.
It seems like that was because for a certain era, you could produce horror movies for next to nothing. It was basically like your weight in corn syrup, an old Hi-8 video recorder, and some special effects that you were able to make in your backyard with like a fake gun. And so you could produce these things and put them out at such a rate that you couldn't do if you were trying to produce Dr. Zhivago at the same time.
Right. But the ones I like I love John Carpenter. The Thing is one of the best horror movies to me. That's such a great one. And also Prince of Darkness was amazing. I love both of those.
You like Prince of Darkness? Really?
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
See, like, I like the ones where you actually think a little bit. Like, Event Horizon to me was
a good one, yes.
That's a good example of a horror movie where you can enjoy it as a movie, not just a horror movie.
Right.
Yeah. What's the, I'm curious, what's the first horror movie that you remember seeing?
I think it was a movie called Cameron's Closet.
I remember that.
A kid's got like a haunted closet, but really he's got ESP or something that's drawing the demons to his closet. The thing is, with horror, most little kids have a tape, or at least they did when I was a kid, that they just watch over and over and over.
Right.
Whether it be Sesame Street or The Wiggles, I had a VHS with Pet Sematary and Cameron's Closet on it, just back to back. And I just literally get up in the morning, and while I was having my juice, I'd put it in and I just watch this hardcore horror film.
That actually sounds like a horror movie itself.
That
just
explains
like a child
so
watching
much.
These over and over.
Actually, that would be kind of weird if all of a sudden you saw a kid just fascinated staring at these dead bodies. I'd be like, we need to get him to the therapist.
Bobby, the twist at the end of the movie is he's not watching any movies. His TV's just static. It's all in his head. He's imagining.
Oh, my God, I thought of the two greatest horror movies ever.
The first one I ever saw, which a lot of people don't think of it when you think of horror movies, definitely a horror movie, though, was Alien. My parents took me that in the theater. I was 7 years old.
That's the thing. There used to be such a cavalier policy with parents about taking their kids to horror movies, which I don't see that around anymore. You know what I mean?
Last time Beth was on here, she actually talked about a movie called A Serbian Film.
Ooh, oh, God.
Yeah.
And she made it sound so bad that I was like, I have to go see this.
Because
there's a part of my personality that's like, I want to see how far
things go. In my brain,
that's
not a horror movie. That's just a gross out movie.
Yeah, that's just an extreme movie.
Let me just say, like, there is...
So you watched it?
Right, I did.
Oh, my God.
There's a part of my brain that's like, I want to see the edges of the internet. Like, I want to see what the world has to offer in terms of everything. And I got there and I was like, no thanks. I'm gonna turn back around. I reached the wall that I thought didn't exist, found it, and said, I'm glad to know this is here.
Now,
I'm backing away slowly.
How much of that movie did you watch?
Did you get through the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Bravo, by
it
the way.
It is. Yeah. That's a thing. Wow.
I got through about one third of that movie, and I'm like, I cannot.
It only,
I got through
it only gets
the
worse.
Synopsis. That's what I got through.
Yeah, the Wikipedia synopsis already made me depressed and kind of sad.
You know, getting through that movie, that as far as like what's out there, you barely dipped your toe in the water of horribleness.
But you know what?
There.
Here's the thing.
That's pretty up there, Dave.
Dude, glad I found the wall. I'm glad I know that that's there.
The ice wall.
It exists. Yeah, it exists for me. I don't have to go beyond the dome. Yeah. I know that there are magic people beyond it, and that there is their territory, and I'm in mine.
Okay. All right.
Some people like that. I like the kind of horror movie I like the best is like, or at least when I was younger, was campy horror. Kind of funny schlocky.
Like Night of the Demons.
Yeah, exactly. But now I think I appreciate more like legitimately scary horror movies. Like those are fun. And they're hard to come by because it's hard to do well.
You know what? There's so much stuff out there right now that because a lot of these movies start in festivals like this, and then you don't hear about them until they end up on your Netflix or Amazon queue.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's this? And, you know, I got to be honest with you, some of them is just like, so much has been done to the point where it's like, oh, this is really suspenseful. I'm wondering when it gets scary or has a plot.
Right.
It's like some of these scary movies that they try and build suspense by nothing happening for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's why I like the ones that have an interesting idea behind them. It's not just shock scares and stuff. For instance, the one that also I think Beth mentioned last time she was here and I went and watched because she mentioned it was It Follows, which is a very unique idea. Like, it is a different idea. You've never seen anything like it. It's the idea that essentially an STD almost of a horror villain, and the way it works is you have sex with somebody who has this thing, and then once you have sex with them, this creature, which will look like anything that your mind can imagine, is going to follow you and kill you once it catches you. You can run away from it. It is very slow moving, but it never stops coming after you. It's a really original, neat idea, and I like any movie, horror or not, that really makes you think about something you've never thought of.
Yeah, I did. I was kind of underwhelmed by that movie. It was a sort of a unique perspective, but I didn't think it was great.
It also makes me think, because I always think about traps, and so I'm always wondering, like, okay, if the It Follows thing is coming after me, what's my game plan? And what I didn't get is, why aren't they boning more prostitutes? Because it seems like an easy way. Here's what you do, because, again, it's going to follow the person. And here's the thing. People will say, well, once it kills that person, it keeps going back down the line. So let's say you have sex with a prostitute. It goes and kills that prostitute. It's then coming back after you, right? So
She has the next client.
That's a good point.
She has her next client, goes to him.
You're just putting layers in between.
He's probably a weird.
But all these people are going to be around in the same area. They're going to get killed soon. It's going to come back after you. You bang the prostitute, put her in a shipping crate, and send her off to, like, Antarctica. And then from then on, the It Follows thing has to get all the way down there, walk down there, and come on back.
See, I'm one step ahead of you, though, because I'd say you do that, but then you wait for her to be with the next John, then you get him in the shipping container.
I like that.
And then an extra layer.
I like that. Oh, even better. Then you get that guy to sleep with a stewardess because she's going to be flying around the world all the time. That It Follows thing is going to be constantly in between trying to catch her. Never going to make it.
It can't afford a plane ticket. What's it going to do?
I just wanted to see what it would be like if you went on a boat as it's approaching the shore. Yeah. Does it do like the Jason Voorhees thing where it just slowly walks underwater?
Yeah, there was a lot of unanswered questions.
And
I was wondering that too. Go to Hawaii. Come on.
Dude, you know, bringing it back to Stephen King, another one that I loved, a horror movie. I love The Mist. You saw that one or no?
I did see The Mist,
That was just really good, because it was like, it's one of those ones where, like, you know, people are the real horror sort of thing. Like, they're all trapped in the grocery store. And but the end, I love the end. It's such a downer ending. And that's what really makes a good horror movie, I think, is like an unhappy ending.
You like to walk away depressed, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, I call it normal, but it's my baseline.
I like to walk away feeling that everybody in the theater feels like I do every day.
Exactly.
Oh, by the way, I meant to tell you, I was at that MMA fight. I saw Casey Ryan fight last week.
Oh, how'd he do?
That's right.
He won.
Spider-Monkey.
Yeah, Spider-Monkey. He's been on the show. He won in about like 46 seconds by arm triangle. So
nice.
Head and arm triangle, like down on the ground?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he threw a couple strikes, double-legged him, got him against the cage, arm triangle. So anyways, while I was up there, I don't know if we told you, Bobby, but when me and Dave went up there tubing, because it was in the Valley View Casino area.
Right.
There was all these signs everywhere for the all-you-can-eat lobster buffet. Right?
Shores was losing his mind. It was like having a child in the backseat of the car when we drive by a Toys R Us. That's what it was like.
Are you a huge lobster guy?
Yes, absolutely. Who's not? Are you telling me you don't think that's the perfect food?
I mean, lobster is fine. I wouldn't flip out if I saw it like on a sign.
I don't like lobster. I prefer crab. I think crab is really good.
They had
like
crab
lobster
there, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
Okay.
Anyways, we were thinking about stopping the car to go eat there. We did not, and I regret it ever since. So I'm up there. I was starving, and
the lobster buffet has been his It Follows the last couple months. It's just been
I just see little drawings of lobster claws everywhere.
Now it's following Aaron.
So she never has sex with me. So we were up there. And I see the signs. I'm like, all right, I can't pass it up. The fights were done a little bit early, so I had time. Aaron's not expecting me home for like another 2 hours. I'm like, I got to go. I'm right here. So I get to the casino. And for those of you that don't live in California, Indian casinos, they're not like Vegas. It's not glamorous.
No, like, no, right.
It's like Reno.
Yeah, yeah, it's like Reno.
It's a little sad.
Everyone in an Indian casino, like, they look like they were on Cops. But, you know, maybe not the perp.
That day.
Maybe not the perp exactly, but the mother that comes out with a cigarette, like,
yeah.
I told him he can't be drinking at my house anymore. And then his stepdaughter, Robert, comes over, and he, we're together, but we don't live together. Well, we live together, but we're not together. It's that person.
An Indian casino to a Vegas casino is like a parking lot carnival to Disneyland.
Right.
And I will tell you this, as somebody who works on a lot of reservations, there are different levels of Indian casino. The further away you are from civilization, if you go to...
I'm like, sure there's a tent somewhere, isn't
right.
there?
Like, if you go out here near San Diego, there's, like, Sequan and Barona. Those are big ones. They're fairly reputable. The further out you go into the boondocks, like, the crazier shit gets.
And again, they're not even card
games. You gotta take me, Bobby. You gotta take me, please.
Oh, yeah, there's places where there's like, a blackjack table, but instead of playing blackjack, they're playing mumbling stick.
If you put your hand out on
it,
you're doing the knife, like, in between your
exactly.
fingers.
Exactly.
How many fingers am I holding up behind my back?
Right. This is one where there's just a bunch of Vietnamese guys yelling, playing Russian roulette.
Except all the chambers have a bullet.
But now more than ever, you gotta take me. I gotta go.
But the payoff is huge.
Yeah. So, anyways, you know, and so these people, they show up, they get up, they get gussied up in their best Who Farted T-shirt and their good fanny pack, and they get on their rascal scooter and they head over there. And so, the minute I'm pushed through the doors of this Indian casino, everyone there is shouting the same thing. Where's the buffet? I want the buffet. Show me where the buffet is. I'm like, oh crap, I have to eat the buffet with these people. So, but anyway, I'm like, all right, I'm still here. I gotta go. So yeah. I finally find the buffet, as they call it, and it is chaos. The line for this buffet is like Space Mountain. It is winding around several little turnstiles, and it's
giving
amazing.
You enough time to calculate how far you are from the ocean. You're like, wait a second.
Yeah, I'm like, I could probably drive to the ocean, jump in, and find a lobster in the dark. They are nocturnal. That's the way to find them.
Right. It's like, imagine there was a buffet at Walmart.
Yes,
that's the situation.
So anyway, I'm looking at this hour and a half line, maybe, and I'm like, oh my god, But now, all right, I've parked, I'm up here. I'm doing the lost cost fallacy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, I can't turn back. So I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm just going to do it. It's a $20 buffet, too. So I'm like, all right, let's do this. And also, so the first guy I talked to, I'm like, sir, where's the line? He's like, fuck you. I'm like, okay. And I go to the next guy. I'm like, sir, where's the line? He's like, no English. I'm like, all right.
Wow.
So I finally find a staff member. I'm like, hey, man. The guy's like flustered. He's like, sir, I cannot talk to you right now. Just go find your seat. I'm like, the hostess is there. I'm like, hey, can you? He's like, sir, we're very busy. Find your seat. I'm like, I don't have a And I look at this flustered staff not paying attention to anything.
Right.
And then I look at this line of people that are either on their phone or more often than not just staring aimlessly into nowhere.
Right.
And I just slowly start walking in.
Yeah.
Now, you guys know this about me. I'm not like a sneaky con artist guy.
Yeah.
I used to be in my 20s. I used to be good at this kind of thing. But those days are gone and I'm out of practice. So you guys are the same way. When you're doing something dishonest and sneaky, the whole time your brain's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Turn back down. Don't do this. You're going to get caught. I'm waiting for the hammer to come down at any second. But I keep walking. No one says anything. A waitress like nods to me. And right when I pick up a plate, I think, oh, here, this is definitely where I get caught. Nothing. I pick up a plate. I've not waited in the line. I've not paid.
Perfect.
And this lady just scoops two lobster tails onto my plate, followed by crab, followed by shrimp, followed by a steak.
In your head, are you already going like, wait a second, maybe I can make a career selling lobster that I steal from this buffet?
I was like, I could do this all the time. But then a horrible realization hit me. I'm like, holy shit. I can't just sit down. They have servers and like a system.
Oh.
Ooh, yeah.
But you can walk around eating.
Well, that's, yeah. Well,
if
I
you
mean,
sit down, someone's going to be like, hey, where'd you come
right,
from?
Right. They're going to be like, who sat you in my session? Let me see your receipt.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. So my plan became, I'm going to eat this food as I go through the line.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever tried to just take your big gross fingers and rip lobster from the shell.
Not
while
lately.
Holding a plate, standing, but it's very hard. It shreds.
It is also a skill Ryan has now developed.
Well, I had to in this line. So as I'm in this line, people are just getting their food. The person next to him, who is me, is going, he's like shoving food into my mouth.
I'm actually kind of surprised you were the only one. Yeah. Given what you've described, I'm surprised this isn't a common thing.
Well, that is how I thought I'd get away with it. I'm like, if this was a fancy place, first of all, there wouldn't be a buffet.
Right.
But I'm like, look at my company I'm surrounded with. I'm definitely not going to stick out that much. So anyways, I'm just shoving food into my mouth, and I get to the end of the line, and there's still food to go. I'm like, all right, I'm going again. And I just jump back around in line, and I'm trying to eat this food, but they put more lobster tails on my plate. So now I have more food than when I started, and I get to the end of the line a second time.
Embarrassment of riches.
And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like,
I feel like this is the King Midas story, but with lobster tails.
Yeah. Sisyphus.
Everything he touches turns to lobster.
He's the Sisyphus of lobsters.
So anyways, I'm like, okay, I got to find a table. I mean, I can't just keep walking around. It's going to get more suspicious that way. So My plan becomes, I'm going to find a table that like people just left from and slide in.
Right.
And be like, catch up with you later, guys. Yeah. I'll probably even have the receipt right there. So anyways, I'm like, I'm looking for that. And all of a sudden I hear, excuse me, sir. Uh-huh. And I turn around and there's a staff member walking right for me.
Oh, no.
This is a brief moment of panic.
And I'm like, okay.
Tosses a lobster in their eyes.
I'm like, all right, I ate most of the lobster. I got what I came for, and they probably got me on petty theft, but realistically, you know, they're probably just going to tell me to leave.
Technically, it's a sovereign nation. If you get out of the borders, you're clear.
Yeah, but they got tomahawks. I'll never make it. So,
not that attitude.
So anyways, I'm like, all right, they got me. Whatever. I'll just give them the plate, and they'll kick me out. It'll be embarrassing. I'll go home. But then he comes up and he goes, I like your shoes.
Ooh.
And I'm like, what? He says, I like your shoes. And I'm like, oh, I get it. He's like a special needs.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like, oh, yeah, hey, you too, buddy. I like your shoes too. He's like, they're not as cool as yours. And all of a sudden I went, oh, my God, don't do this. Don't do what you're thinking of doing. But you've come this far, and the universe did present this to you. I'm like, hey, buddy, I need you to help me find my table. And he's like, your table? They should have given you a table when you came in. I'm like, yeah, but they didn't. I need your help, buddy.
God.
Need you.
I thought Ryan was going to take the guy's shoes.
Why? So he's Ryan's shoes are clearly better. Why would he do that?
So he sits me down. He's like, yeah, you can use this one. I'll tell him I put you here. I'm like, thanks, buddy.
Oh.
You've been a big help today. And I just woof down this lobster.
P.S., give me your bus pass.
Now, for those of you hating me right now, I'll tell you, karma did get me back, because on my way out, he's like, do you want to see my name tag? And I was like, sure, buddy. He's like, loss prevention, motherfucker. Get on the ground. No, but that would have been great. On the way out, though, I did hit a blackjack table. I'm like, yeah, I'm at the casino. I just skipped out on a lobster buffet here, cut the line. And in 3 minutes, I lost three times what that buffet would have cost me. And then when I got home, I got food poisoning from the shitty lobster.
Meanwhile, there's some guy in like a camera room somewhere looking at a bunch of monitors watching Ryan, and they're like, he fell for the old fake free buffet trick.
It was a gigantic sting operation. Thousands of extras.
But don't worry, I've decided to comp the mini bar. So anyway,
is a true tale of karma.
Karma did not screw around with me on that.
Absolutely.
One. Absolutely. That is that horror movie should be in this festival right now.
Yeah, that's some horrible magic.
Lobster
right
buffet.
Oh, good.
Free
times.
Buffet would be a great horror movie.
Yeah. Now joining us, the man of the hour. This is kind of like the headlining interview of our little interview showcase we've been doing. He is the organizer of Horrible Imaginings, Miguel Rodriguez, everybody. Well, thanks for having us here. Thanks for coming on.
Wow, thank you for being here, and thanks for having me on and having the bravery to sit through the terror.
Absolutely. We were just telling our listeners it's so cool here. If you're not here, you're missing out. They've got booths with people getting their makeup done. They have so many awesome little things going on.
That was now, Bobby. Sorry about that.
I can't control myself.
I just can't help it.
Now, Miguel, this is the eighth year you've done this?
This is year eight, yes.
Year eight. And I heard this started in like a rinky-dink theater downtown somewhere.
Yeah, it's an art center.
That was my house, man.
Totally. No, it's a DIY art space. That's where it started downtown.
Oh, okay.
10th Avenue Art Center. That's still there, right by the Hodads.
Oh, I know exactly. The 10th Avenue Theater?
That's it. That was our original home.
I did a play there. That's amazing.
There you go.
That's right across from a homeless shelter, isn't there? Like a halfway house?
So they told Ryan it was a play. It was actually just a bed to sleep in for the night.
I have a story about the homeless shelter.
You do?
So year one, we're setting up. I'm kind of like figuring out how to run my own festival. And someone comes over from the homeless shelter. He's this gaunt. He looks like he's 180 years old.
Perfect for a zombie.
Exactly. No, I made him the usher.
No.
Nice.
Like, so, you are going to lead people in the theater.
And so everyone thought, like, oh, this guy's costume's great.
Yeah.
Comes with smell.
He didn't smell that bad, so it helped.
Now, some guy tried to assault me for a cigarette. That's my homeless shelter story. So anyways, so tell us about that first year when you were running the show. What was the toughest part about it?
Kind of knowing what to do, but honestly, I've worked for film festivals before. I programmed for them.
Okay.
The difference is being the director and kind of running everything and being the manager and making sure everything's running smoothly and making sure the picture looks good.
Making sure the homeless guy does his job.
He kicked ass, by the way. He was great. I hoped he would return the following year, but he probably died.
No one can find him.
Yeah.
It'd be great. He got over his drug addiction. Miguel's like, darn it.
Man, I hope he
stays
homeless.
Now he wants money.
just making sure everything runs smoothly, and it's hard.
Now, just like any other event, I'm sure that there's a litany of problems every time. What is like the biggest one when you're running a film festival? Is there one that's the most prevalent?
Yeah, that's picture and sound not working.
Oh,
my. Yeah, so it's a film festival. My whole mission is to display film and display film in a way that is immersive and captures the audience. And if the projection is off or the sound isn't working, it just, everything's fucked up after that.
Yeah.
That was year one. He's going through his checklist. Like, damn it,
no,
I forgot a projector.
We had projector problems year three. So year one went great.
Yeah.
Year two went pretty good. Year three is my nightmare year. Yeah.
Really? Were you worried that the festival wouldn't survive past it?
I did. I kind of wanted to quit. Yeah.
Okay.
It was purely because we got a projector that didn't work, and then we had to call in a tech guy, and we were running hours late because it sucked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, have you seen some success stories come out of the festival where like people have screened here and they've gone on to like bigger...
Oh, we've had a lot of filmmakers get distribution.
Good question, David. No, it's a dead end. Don't even bother.
thanks for killing my question, Charles. Good job.
Sorry.
But we have a lot of filmmakers who... Like, for example, one filmmaker, A.J. Briones, he had a short film called The Smiling Man. It played in 2015. Awesome short film. And short films usually, they kind of play a circuit and disappear. But his got picked
up. Ha! Take that, Shores.
Yeah, that's true. It's what happens. But his got picked up by Crypt TV, and it's been viewed now like almost 10 million times.
Well... I'd imagine with short films, they're more of a pitch for a feature if they're done well, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's what happened with Lights Out, because I remember that feature was amazing. That short film was amazing.
Yeah.
So do you know anyone involved with that one?
Do I know? No, I do not.
Good that I can tell you. It kind of fell apart as a feature.
Yeah. the short film concept works in the short film space.
Right, right.
But how do you stretch it out for 90 minutes?
Yeah, a lot of people have trouble with that,
I think. Horror movies in general, it's really hard to make a good horror movie these days.
Well, everything's been done. Yeah.
It's hard to have something unique, but I feel like most horror movies just kind of fall apart, like theatrically released ones.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, it's like kind of like punk rock, though. Like, it's... For me, it's really the independent horror tends to be better than the major studio horror.
Well, you know, it's not only like punk rock in that way, I think, but also like it brings people together because I think just like punk rock, in your high school, there was only three or four kids that liked it and you were all friends.
Totally.
And I think that's why these festivals are so great, because if you're anything like me, you spent a lot of years thinking you were like the only guy that liked horror.
Yeah.
You know, even my friends, like some of them liked it, but I was the one that had to get them into it. And even then they're like, yeah, Pet Sematary is cool. All right.
Yeah.
Let's see something else
but
now.
The passion isn't there.
So,
back in my day, I had to write letters to Fangoria magazine and there was no internet.
Right.
With a pen and paper.
With a pen and paper. Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
What was this? The 1930s? Pen and paper.
And that was the only way you had friends.
Yeah. Yeah. So now what inspired you to actually start running this festival?
Driving to LA for horror festivals because there wasn't one in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
Trying to get mic time, you have to go up to LA.
Oh, yeah, just like stand-up. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not just the fact that I had to drive to Los Angeles because I still do that a couple of times a month.
Sure.
But just not having one in San Diego seemed unacceptable to me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, have you seen the numbers grow in the 8 years?
Yeah.
So it's like Comic-Con.
Absolutely.
Every year it gets a little bigger.
Jesus.
Oh, well, hey, Comic-Con started somewhere, man.
That's
that was
true.
In a basement of the El Cortez.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Back in like 1971 or two or whatever.
Right. So 8 years ago was your 1971. All you got to go is up.
Well, it has gone. I mean, look at it. We're in the freaking Museum of Photographic Art.
That's what's so amazing. We were talking about this before you came on.
Yeah.
It's just such a weird juxtaposition.
Yeah, it's an odd space to be in, I feel like, for a horror festival.
It is. But in a way, it really works because for us, we're always trying to look deeper at why people are making the movies, what they're trying to express, and that's kind of what the Museum of Photographic Arts is doing with their exhibits as well.
Plus, they had a bar mitzvah cancel, so it was available.
This is our third year here, and they've always been pretty welcoming to us. The first year, I think they were a little scared.
But look at the state of it. You got people in zombie makeup walking around.
Which is incredible, right?
Yes, it really is.
But, I mean, for the museum patrons, for the most part, I think they're getting an experience they weren't expecting.
Yeah.
And we have people taking pictures who aren't part of the festival with the zombies and the monsters and so that's fun. It makes a different
experience. The nice thing about a museum audience is they have to pretend to like whatever's going on because they don't know if it's art that they don't get. Like, if they walked in and they just saw, like, a guy churning butter, they'd be like, oh, I see.
What do you think he was going for with that?
It's about politics.
What do you think the artist was going for when you mounted that urinal to the wall? That was the bathroom, you idiot.
Like, nice Duchamp reference there.
So, over the last 8 years, mm-hmm. has there been a film or maybe a couple that really stand out as still your favorites to this day that you still think about as like, that was the great submission?
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a lot. So I'll name some features. There was a mockumentary called Long Pigs.
Long Pigs?
Long Pigs, which is a euphemism for human flesh.
Okay.
Yeah, cannibalism.
Oh.
And it was a mockumentary following around a cannibal. And
nice. That sounds funny.
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting. And the thing is that the lead that they're following around is charismatic. So it really helps when you're just looking at him kind of talking to the camera. But what made that one remarkable and stand out in my mind so much is this budget is like zero, right? But they manage, through sheer ingenuity, they time-lapse him tying a body upside down and slaughtering it like an animal, like literally cutting it into pieces, and it looks really real.
They
and
actually killed a dude for that.
Really, like sometimes you
take that
like
cannibal holocaust. We just one upped you with that turtle.
It was actually that original homeless guy from the first festival.
That's what happened to him.
Yeah. So that one just that hit me right off the bat. There was a documentary called Zero Killed that has stuck with me for a while from Germany. And that whole thing is about kind of our murder fantasies. And so what it does, it interviewed people from all walks of life, doctors, lawyers, teachers, and asked them if they had murder fantasies. Then they would talk about what they were. Then it had them reenact them like a reenactment. And then
it sounds like some
again.
Stanford prison experiment.
Oh, man. Yeah. Exactly like that. And it feels like it when you're watching it. It's really fucking dark. And then he interviews them again like 8 or 10 years later to like.
How many people have you killed?
Yeah.
I'm up to six.
Well, that's why the movie's called Zero Killed,
yeah.
Right? But, it's very
with an asterisk next to it.
I feel like the Germans are so fucked up. Like, even their kids' movies are horror movies just in and of themselves.
Yeah.
From Germany, there are definitely some interesting films, but horror as a genre, in a mainstream fashion, it's a little bit harder to sell it in Germany, partially because of the history they've had. At least that's what I've been hearing from the German filmmakers.
Is that right?
No, this isn't gross enough.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think like they're like, we've experienced this enough. We're done.
Yeah.
But still, this is the country that gave us Necromantic and Necromantic 2. And
which again were just kids movies.
those were coloring books actually.
It's their version of Teletubbies.
I love those movies, by the way.
Now, Miguel, what do you think right now the biggest problem with mainstream horror is? Because we got to agree there's a lot of crap out there right now.
For sure.
Oh, well, I mean, the answer to that question is easy. It's that A, studios are more than historically ever before less inclined to take any kind of risk on spending money on making a film. And so they want their movies to appeal to as wide an audience as possible. And what that requires is kind of watering down their films. Now, with something like horror, where the whole intent is to go someplace dark, you can't water it down for it to have any kind of punch or any kind of... And so that's what you get overall, is kind of like watered down rehashes, and also familiarity, remakes and doing the same thing over and over and over again. And, you know, like I do kind of subscribe to the John Landis way of thinking, which is, you mentioned that everything's kind of been done. There is no originality, but there is execution. So it's not in the originality, it's
sure.
in the execution and how it's pulled off. But you see, you rarely see the execution pulled off in a way that makes any kind of...
Well, that would make sense the way you're saying it. Like, for instance, John Landis did American Werewolf in London. That was not... That was
amazing movie. Amazing.
Yes, but that was not the first werewolf movie ever done, no. But it was just the best. So yeah.
It's really incredible.
We were talking about this earlier. I'm interested in what you have to say. What do you think is the most original idea in horror movies you've seen in the last few years?
So this is a horror-esque, it's a little art house, but the French film Raw, which...
I just watched that one.
Yeah, which I really enjoyed, and it's what...
Raw is a girl goes off to art school, mm-hmm. and basically starts developing cannibalistic tendencies.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
And there's a family history behind this.
Yes,
too.
Yeah, so...
What about mainstream, though? What do you think? Like, what have you liked as far as originality the last few years?
Good Lord, man. That's hard.
I don't think I've been scared in a theater since Mama came out. Remember that one? That was a good one.
Don't Breathe had
Don't Breathe was very good.
I didn't like Don't Breathe because I feel like they really didn't utilize the blind angle. Like,
yeah, that's true.
He was just asleep.
But, I mean, it does okay at building some tension, at least. And Fede Alvarez, at least, will take some risks at... going someplace dark. I mean, it's not the greatest I've seen, but if we're gonna go mainstream, I can't think of that much that's better right now.
Now, I do have this question for you. Bold move doing the festival this weekend, because as you definitely know, it's the opening of possibly the biggest horror movie this year. Is it?
Yes. And we had our date set before Warner Brothers.
Oh.
I feel like it's actually a good weekend because people are kind of in the mood. They're seeing the movie come out. They're like, oh, there's a horror.
Yeah, because
thing.
I mean, they're not going to spend all weekend at it. They can see it once and then come here.
Right. All right. So it is very unpredictable to see how something like that's going to affect us. But I was worried when they announced the date.
Yeah.
The good news is, I know I've been crapping on the studios a lot, but they do work with us a lot to provide. They give us a lot of VIP access to their press screenings and advanced screenings because they want to get a test audience who they're horror fans.
Right.
And so when we got offered that for it, and I was able to, usually I'll put it on social media as like the first 50 people to sign up get to do this with us and get front of the line access and don't have to wait in line, whatever.
Yeah.
This time I was like, I went straight to the people who bought VIP passes to the festival already.
Nice, that's awesome.
And I said, guys, you bought VIP passes. I know that it is playing our opening night, so you get a chance to see it for everyone else. And it worked out.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
very cool.
VIPs, we all went and saw it on Tuesday.
My wife's seeing that right now without me, so could have used those passes.
Sorry about that.
So anyways... we had Beth on for a second. Mm-hmm. We asked her what her favorite so far this year has been. What sticks out this year and why?
For me, it's no contest. There's a film called A Nearly Perfect Blue Sky.
The French film, right? Yeah.
It's French Canadian. Yeah.
Oh.
It's Quebecois.
Subtitles are subtitles to me. I'm not reading them.
That's true. It's just, man. And so far, let me put it this way. When, I walked into the theater after the credits rolling on that film. I'm walking down the hallway and people down the aisle to go and talk about it. Someone from the audience is like, God damn, Miguel, what the hell? You know, it's just one of those.
It was that shocking.
It's less shock and more that it wrenches your guts as you're watching it. It's very disturbing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it takes you along on a very dark journey.
Okay.
But it's also beautiful and amazing. So it's all of those things.
Now, is there an online community that they could be part of? You know, because the Horrible Imaginings is once a year, but I imagine you want to stay connected with your fan base in the meantime. Is there places that our listeners could go to find out about events, things like that?
Absolutely. So we do have the website, hifilmfest.com. But as far as keeping in touch and stuff, Facebook is huge. Twitter, I'm on Twitter a lot. So it's facebook.com/horribleimaginings. Twitter is HiffSD, that's HIFFSD. And our Instagram is horrible_imaginings. So we're always posting stuff about events we're doing. We do about 60 events a year, actually, because we do monthly screenings, too. We're finishing up our year of John Carpenter.
Right.
Yeah, we've got Prince of Darkness coming up. So that's a lot of fun. We also do a monthly series here at MOPA called Famous Firsts this year as part of an offshoot group we have called Film Geeks SD. And for our October, we've got the first Francis Ford Coppola film, Dementia 13.
That is an incredible movie.
It is. It's a lot of fun. I can't wait to share it with a lot of people. Said they hadn't seen it yet, so I can't wait to show that.
Well, Miguel, thank you so much for having us here at your festival. Thanks for coming on the show. This has been so much fun for all of us.
And it's been so much fun for talking to you guys. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks, Miguel. Now, I know we've talked about it twice now, but it is the opening.
They should be really giving us money for this.
Yeah. At this point, it's required. But it's been so successful in the one day that it's been out. They did that thing where they've already greenlit a sequel to it.
Even though the book itself is decades old and there's not a sequel to the book?
No, right, exactly, yeah.
That's fantastic.
And by the way, it's probably not going to be written by Stephen King.
No.
And it's good. Guess what they're doing? They're doing that thing where they give a backstory to the character because that's so necessary.
Oh, God.
The prologue type stories.
Yeah, where the unknown evil gets its clown suit.
Anakin Skywalker get started in pod racing?
Oh, yeah, because we those burning questions. How many prequels were we to on Leatherface? Like three?
Dude, that's such a shit idea that Hollywood does. When something makes money, like, hey, what else can we wring out of this? Like, we'll just slap the name on something else and people will pay for it.
Yeah, and the thing is, sequels used to have like the returning team.
Right.
But now they just like outsource it.
Yeah.
Well, it's cheaper that way than they don't pay the same stars to come
back. Yes, that's true. But at the same time, like, you know, it's like Stephen King is what makes it scary. And you know what else makes it scary? Is the fact that there's no backstory. You don't know where this evil came from. They're like, let's change that. Let's give it a backstory. What do you think?
I hope the sequel is called Shit.
Yeah. All right, let's call it a day and try and catch one of these movies before the end of the festival.
And don't forget, you can catch me and Ryan this Friday at Bay Bridge Brewery. We got a show, Ryan, starting at 8 p.m.
8 p.m.?
Or you can go to Wiener Schnitzel with me. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah, there's no way I'd book him. All right, I'm Ryan for Dave and Bobby's and the rest of the Horrible Imagining saying see you next week, Cruising with the Twos.
Sisyphus. Everything he touches turns to lobster. Yeah, time passing by. Oh, that time passing by. Oh, motherfucking time is passing by.